I love spending time in the temple because I feel closer to God there. I can listen to a reading from the Torah or discuss a religious passage. I can observe the transaction of temple business, watch sacrificial rituals, or study the diverse assortment of people who flow in and out of the temple every day. These crowds have been steadily growing. More and more people are stopping in Jerusalem on their way to Bethany beyond the Jordan, and all because of one man. To say he is unique would be an understatement. His name is John, but they refer to him as John the Baptizer, John the Baptist, because he calls people to confess their sins, and then he baptizes the repentant ones. Reports are that he is a blunt man, and that both his demeanor and appearance follow suit. They say instead of a traditional linen tunic, he wears clothing made of camel's hair, and he eats locusts and wild honey. I know some have returned saying that rather than graciously receiving those who had journeyed to hear his message, he verbally attacked them. Yet he claims to be a man of God, and no one who sees him seems to doubt that this is true. It was no surprise that both the Sadducees and the Pharisees took notice and began asking questions. They discovered that though he was born into a priestly family, he was not given his father's name, and he did not follow his father's work, which is highly unusual. John's father, Zechariah, is a priest. In the eyes of the authorities, that also makes John a priest. John grew up, though, in the remote wilderness areas of Judea, so the desert's familiar to him. But they certainly didn't understand why a priest was going to act in such an unconventional way. John's claims that he is baptizing in preparation for the Lord's coming made people start to wonder if he was the longed-for Messiah, the Anointed One, or Elijah, or even the prophet. Once these questions started circulating, the Jewish leaders had to take action. So they decided to send a delegation of priests and Levites to talk to John and get some answers. My uncle was part of this group, and when he asked me to come along as a witness, I jumped at the opportunity. I was anxious to get a close look at the man. Upon our arrival, they wasted no time. The questioning began immediately. Who are you? Are you the Messiah, the Anointed One? I knew they were asking this because every Jew believes that sooner or later, God will intervene through a Messiah to save them. But we don't have a common understanding of how this will happen exactly. John did not seem to be caught off guard or alarmed by this question. He simply rejected the idea. In fact, he passionately declared loud enough for everyone to hear, "I am not the Messiah." They asked, "Well, then who are you? Are you Elijah?" This question didn't surprise me either. It is believed that Elijah will return to signal the Messiah's coming and to prepare the world to receive him. Having secretly wondered about this theory myself, I held my breath in anticipation of the answer. Without hesitation, John's voice rang out clear and strong, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" they asked. Every Jew recognizes the reference in this question, a scriptural promise that the Lord will raise up a prophet from our midst. John's response was short and to the point. "No," he said. A heavy silence followed, and I found myself thoroughly fascinated by this very strange man. He stood alone before a delegation of Jewish leaders who wore their authority like suits of armor, but he did not give the slightest indication that he was concerned by their questions. He did not attempt to explain himself. He obviously had no interest in appeasing anybody. He did not waver or tremble as I had seen men do in the temple courts. In fact, he looked completely composed. I found it quite extraordinary. Another person finally broke the stillness and said, "Well, who are you? You must give us an answer to take back to those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" John replied, "I'm nothing more than a voice bidding people to prepare the way for the Lord." Someone else asked, "Well, if you're not the Messiah or Elijah or the prophet, then why are you baptizing?" "I'm only baptizing with water," John said, "but there is one among you, one you do not recognize, who will come after me, and I am not worthy to untie the straps of his sandals." I was stunned. At the very least, John was a powerful preacher. People were coming from far and wide to hear him. From what I could tell, he was a man brimming with conviction and purpose, but he identified himself as nothing more than a servant. I don't think I've ever seen anyone with that kind of power within their grasp and not hold on to it with both hands. Who is this man called John the Baptist? He willingly threw on a cloak of humility that would have been too heavy for most men to carry, and he wore it as if it weighed nothing. Over and over, he refocused attention away from himself and toward God. I found his message to be both a warning and a call to action. I quickly recognized my own need to pay attention to the places I had wandered off of the path, the need to reset my course. On the road back to Jerusalem, I found myself recalibrating my thoughts. I discovered lost pieces of myself that I did not even know were missing. I also found it odd that although I never stepped into the water, by the time I arrived back in Jerusalem, I could not deny that some type of change had taken place. I had returned renewed, restored. When people ask me about my time in the wilderness, I tell them that John the Baptizer was clear about who he was and who he was not. I ask them if they can say the same. Who are you? Do you know?
Thank you, Hans, for bringing that perspective of the story to life for us. I invite you to pray with me. Lord, may the words of all of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. For the time that we are together in Advent, our sermons are looking a little different. Rather than one person speaking and then responding, we've been spending time letting the scriptures speak through our own lives as we do a little bit of a deeper dive into discerning God's good news among us in the scriptures that we're hearing. And so today, I'm inviting you once again into dialogue about this person of John the Baptist. In this story, we hear that John is both a witness as a noun, and he goes about witnessing as a verb to God's work. And actually, this word witness appears over 50 times in the Gospel of John. John is a witness, and we are also witnesses. What have you witnessed of God's love and care at work in the world? What is it that you have to share with us about how Jesus is manifest in our communities, in our neighborhoods, in our lives, in our nation, in our world? As we're hearing the story from John the Baptist, he wants to make it very clear that he is not Jesus. He is not the one that was expected, the one they are waiting for. The work that is happening through him is like a character witness in a trial, right? When you hear the word witness, that's a legal term. He's been sworn in to give a chance for the jury to decide. Is this the good news that God intends for the world? Last night, I was on what felt like the 100th call of the past month around this downtown self-development that I mentioned in the announcements. As many of you know, the largest developer in Raleigh, easily the most powerful man in our city, is planning to build a luxury mega development on three huge parcels of land. He owns two of them and intends to buy one more. In the end, this development will be roughly twice the size of our current downtown. As people in the community began to learn about this project, it became very clear that this would be the final push out of historically Black communities that form a ring around the top of where this land sits. As we've seen in other places throughout Raleigh, property taxes would raise astronomically. Stormwater, which is already an issue in Walnut Creek watershed, flooding from that would wash out these neighborhoods. Communities already hampered by lack of access to basic amenities like a grocery store would now compete for housing with teardowns and high-rise condos. And also, as many of you know, we are part of a broad-based community organization, One Wake, that is doing everything in its power to follow the lead of our Black members in Southeast Raleigh to demand specific and enforceable community benefits that would mitigate some of these concerns. as I was on that 101st call last night, Wah, who is an advocate from another organization, said that he was actually feeling hopeful. In spite of all the money and power that was pouring into this project, Wah said on this phone call, when have we ever seen 40 religious institutions, mostly churches, stand up to city council and to developers? When have we witnessed this before? Friends, that was a testimony. And Wah's testimony isn't about us. It's about the Jesus that is behind us. It's about the faith that we profess that calls us into this complicated and difficult work of economic justice and combating environmental racism. We have been called out from just looking after our own. We have been called out from remembering that God's desire is for a world set free from the terror of mammon and from the destruction of our neighbors. We've been called into this good news that says that none of us is free until all of us is free. We are not Jesus, but this is our testimony to who he is. Today, I am adding this symbol, which is my charger for my computer, which is where almost all of these meetings have taken place because of COVID, because this has been the vehicle of witness that I have seen to who Jesus is, and adding this to my Advent wreath. And so I wonder, when have you taken a stand to give evidence about who Jesus is? When have you or someone else testified, have taken the stand with your life, with your actions, with your words, to show who Jesus is? What did you learn from someone else who witnessed to the character of who God is? Invite you into the space now as we contemplate John's witness, the 50 witness testimonies in the Gospel of John, and how that witness connects to our own lives. You're welcome to just jump in, or if you feel better about raising your hand, I'm happy to call on you that way too. But where have you seen a witness of Jesus in your life and in the life of our world?
I have something to say. Well, a couple of things. What you were saying, Melissa, really resonates about one wake and standing up for what's right. And as we were reading the first chapter of John, and John the Baptist is saying, prepare a straight pathway for the Lord is coming, I started thinking about the word crooked and all the possibilities that crooked has, and all the Christmas songs about making the crooked straight, and thinking about what's going on downtown and the crooked powers that are making, you know, putting all the wrinkles in people's lives and everything, and how I just happened to have this yarn here, and if you look at yarn when you're knitting, I have to pull it often so it won't be all crooked and make wrinkles in my stitches. And I was thinking, well, it doesn't have to be the entire skein of yarn that is pulled to be straightened. It's just a little piece, enough to make a couple of stitches. And sometimes we don't think that what we do or what we say is powerful enough, so we don't say it or we don't do it. And everything counts. And to connect that with your magnificent provision for Advent this year, with the I'm just loving it. the devotions for Advent, and that to me connects with what we're talking about today, because on the first one, Mary says, "Well, how can this be?" And we're always asking, "Well, how can this be? How can this evil be going on? Or how can I count for anything? What can I do? How could this be possible?" And then on the second devotion, the angel says, "Well, with God, all things are possible." Mm. And then for this week that starts today, the angel also says, "Well, do not be afraid. So go for it, you know, and know that God is behind you, and make this crooked straight." So that all ties in beautifully for me. Thank you.
Alyssa?
Yes.
I want to share about Muhammad Isa. His name is Muhammad Isa, Muhammad Jesus. He is a lawyer in Chad, trained in the UK. He's a UK citizen, Chadian, come back. And he runs this organization, Promotion of Education, for people in places where there are no schools, children have no way of getting an education. Some of you may have seen pictures that I sent of schools that I visited. And he definitely is a witness of God's love for people in faraway places, bringing hope and just, you know, what we take for granted, just being able to go to school. So he definitely has stood out in my time in Chad as a very powerful witness. Just the way he relates to people, he comes from that area of North Kanem. So he has a commitment to the children and the people. And it's not an easy place to even travel to, back and forth, hours of driving in the sand and arranging for teachers and school and food and water for the kids. And so, yeah, he definitely has been a witness.
I can share something, Mauricio. Last year, I was invited by a conference, work for a Mennonite Church USA, Mennonite Mission Network, and I was invited by a conference to work with a church that was going through a lot of conflict and probably needed to be disbanded. It was a small group of people, but it's a long story. But basically, what I found there when I met with these nine people, it was somebody particularly from that group was having a record of abusive behaviors toward the Hispanic Mennonite pastor that was a woman. So I saw that dynamic, I confronted the dynamic. And at some point when I met with them for three or four times, I have to call this person, this man, in a way that I never did before. And I was sitting there with the conference minister, German, Swiss German Mennonites, that normally in these kind of situations, they didn't know what to do. I mean, they were silent. They were really red-faced, emotional. But I spoke up and I confronted this man, and I told him that he kept behaving that way, he would be in serious trouble. I really threatened him, even with legal actions. And then the situation was resolved, We replanted a church there, but I know it was evil and needed to be confronted. And I felt like I never been in a situation like that. But then I realized that, yeah, it's like this John the Baptist, you know, it could be complicated, but, you know, you have to do it. Somebody has to do it.
Thanks, Mauricio, for sharing that. Luz or John, did you have something to share?
Yes, it's me this time. My thought immediately went to Sri. Mm-hmm. And the work that Sri has done for Mennonite mm-hmm. Central Committee through to try to build peace, whether it goes back to his time in the Middle East or his time in Southeast Asia, and the work that he's done and his commitment to moving to Chad. And I think about other missionaries, and I don't necessarily know who to speak about, but I think about the missionaries that go to do work in places, not necessarily those that go to preach. As many of you know, that Luce and I were in the Baptist church before we came to Raleigh Mennonite. And one of the real strengths that I saw in, at least in North Carolina, was the Baptist men and their mission work through their construction efforts or their deconstruction efforts. And both men and women participate in that, but their willingness to go into almost any situation to try to make it a better situation. And I think of some of the really bad stuff that happened even in Eastern North Carolina with the flooding, where people's homes were completely flooded, and you go into those homes weeks and months later and the rot has set in, everything smells, everything's just nasty. You know, refrigerators haven't been cleaned and haven't run in weeks and months. Clothes that were in the washing machine, things like that, that the power went out, the washing machine stopped, and the clothes have started to rot because they're still full of soap and water. And they do those same kinds of things really across the world when called to do that. And it's, I mean, they're just an amazing group of people to work with, in that their willingness to give of their time and their money, the time away from families and things. But I also think, as we in our own church went to West Virginia and worked up there, and there was one of the episodes, I was not part of it because the group I was with was working in an empty apartment building. So we really didn't interact with much of anybody except for a couple of times with the neighbors. But if I remember correctly, Ann Cooper went to a house where there was some construction to be done. And if it wasn't Ann, I apologize to who it was. But there was almost nothing that Ann was able to do to help construction-wise. But yet she was able to sit and talk and get to know the people in the home and to be able to administer to them by building relationships. And God is present in those moments. And I thank all of those who participate in those moments.
Thanks, John. I'm grateful for each person who shared today and for the continuing ways that we bear witness to the character of Jesus in our lives and in our world. Something I'm often reminded of is that when we are offering up our life as a church to the world, this is the evidence that we have, right, for why we organize our life the way we do, why we are who we say we are. And so just with gratitude to each person who makes up the life of this church and continues to show me the character of Jesus in your work in the world, in your work in interaction with one another. So also gratitude to each of you for your witness to me of the risen Lord. So we say amen, and we continue on with our worship.